This podcast is produced by CDSS, the Country Dance and Song Society. CDSS provides programs and resources, like this podcast, that support people in building and sustaining vibrant communities through participatory dance, music, and song. Want to support this podcast and our other work? Visit cdss.org to donate or become a member today.
One and a half around. Nine below one, couple and four with six.
Look around to the right when you're balanced. Look around to your right and you balance once again.
Swing your partner. Nod your quarter element left to left. Hand back to your partner, right, left, right hand. Over hand around. Then meet your partner, promenade.
Everybody, swing your partners on.
Hey there, I'm Mary Wesley, and this is From the Mic, a podcast about North American social dance calling.
Nicely done.
Through conversations with callers across the continent, we'll explore the world of square, contra, and community dance callers. Why do they do it? How did they learn? What's their role on stage and off in shaping our dance communities? What can they tell us about the corner of the dance world that they know and love the best? Each episode, we'll talk to a different caller, but they all have something in common, a spark, a desire to lead, to share joy, to invite movement, to stand in that special place between the band and a room full of dancers, or people who don't yet know that they're dancers. And From the Mic say, find a partner, let's dance. Hi everyone, happy spring. Today we are very lucky because we get to spend some time with the amazing, the effervescent Wendy Graham. Wendy lives in Durango, Colorado, and is a self-proclaimed dance maniac. Her passion for music, song, and dance caught fire in 1991 on a Danish-American exchange youth dance tour to Denmark. Today, Wendy leads English and American community folk dances and teaches social couples dance across the country and around the world. She's proudly served on the Lloyd Shaw Foundation and Country Dance and Song Society boards and the CDSS Lifetime Contribution Award Committee. She loves building community and sharing the joy of music, song, and dance with people of all ages and abilities. In our Zoom chat, Wendy shared some powerful stories about the formative experiences that shaped her love and dedication to community dancing, and also explains how she got so many pen pals. I'm also grateful that she offered some of her thoughts on the ever-shifting landscape of dance roles and calling terminology, including global positional calling, which we haven't really discussed very much on this podcast. I think you'll love getting to know Wendy. Awesome. Well, good morning, Wendy Graham. Welcome to From the Mic.
Thank you for having me, Mary Wesley. It is so nice to see you and talk to you again. It's been way too long.
It has been so long, and I was just thrilled when I recently saw you posting on Facebook that you're getting out there on the caller trail, visiting some different communities, and it was a great prompt to reach out and see if you were up for chatting. Yeah, thanks so much for joining me, and I'm excited to spend some time talking about your caller life and all the things that come with it. I usually start by just asking to hear a little bit about how you came to the dance world and how you found your way to the caller's mic.
Oh, this is my favorite story to tell, and I'm happy to tell it over and over and over again because it's truly like the life-changing moment, you know, what I will call like the keystone moment, where after that, you know, everything else flowed. So if that hadn't happened, I would be a very different person and have lived a very different life. But what happened is My mom was a physical education teacher. And so part of that training, you had to do folk dance in the curriculum. And so my mom was also a dancer growing up. She was a ballet dancer. And I think she even did some international dance in the Baltimore area. And so kind of had that in the background. But then, of course, you know, she went to school and got her degrees and started working and had a family and all of that. And so when I was 13, she wanted to kind of reclaim her life. Like, I was old enough. I was, you know, kind of flying on my own, and she was ready to take back her life and do some of the things that she really loved. And folk dance was something that popped up for her. And she said that she was reading the Smithsonian magazine, and there was an article about Berea College and their folk dance program. And so back then there was no internet, you know, there was no web, World Wide Web, you know, to search for those kinds of things. And so she called the office and spoke with Joe Tarter, who ran the program there, and said, I'm interested in doing folk dance in my area, which was the Washington, D.C. metro area. Do you know anyone? And he said, oh, well, there is a woman, Barbara Harding. She lives in Herndon, Virginia, and which was just down the road from us in Virginia. And so that's how my mom initially got connected into the folk dance scene. And so she started going to Barbara's dances, which Barbara had a child care center, and it was called Harding Hall, and it was built especially to have kids during the day and dances by night. So they purposefully built this giant, beautiful wood floor, and they would literally just push like the tiny little toys and then the tiny little chairs like all around the side, and we would just dance down the middle. And it would usually be, you know, it was really like a kind of a house party, because it wasn't always a huge event. There might be one fiddler and sometimes maybe even just eight dancers. And so, and it was just a couple of bucks to kind of, you know, give the musicians some gas money. And so she started going, I think it was twice a week. She had like an English and an American dance. And so my mom started going, and Barbara asked her, you know, do you have a daughter in high school? And my mom said, well, she's in junior high. Why? You know, what's up? And Barbara said, I'm taking a group to Denmark this summer, and I need two more girls. And this was in March, and we left in June. So yeah, my mom said, so would you like to go to Denmark this summer? And I was like, yeah, that sounds cool, you know? And okay, well, you just have to go to these folk dance practices. Which was like pretty kind of dorky, you know, to a 13-year-old, and also intriguing because I was like a jazz, tap, and ballet dancer. Okay. And I did like to dance, you know, and I had done square dancing in the fifth and sixth grade and had even been in the performance set of the square, you know. And so there was a part of me that wanted to like that. And there was another part of me that was ashamed to be public about that because of being a teenager, you know? And so my mom said, well, why don't you just go to the practice and see what you think? And if you think that you could, you know, do it, then that would be a really great opportunity for you. So she took me to the practice. And what I remember, and this is an important memory for me as a caller to always remember, is I had no clue what was happening. I was completely disoriented. I mean, downright dizzy. You know, I did not know what any of the moves were or who I was dancing with or what I was supposed to be doing, like at all, like zero. Like a naturally kind of confident dancer had no clue.
Yeah.
So that is so important for me to remember. And you know, the other thing that I remember that I always try to remember as a caller is, when my mom picked me up, and I remember getting in the van and she said, so how was it? Like, would you go back? And I said, yes. And that's what I always tell people in my beginner lesson is look around. I say, raise your hand if this is not your first time. And those people raise their hand and I say, we all had such a good time that we came back. And I know you will too. And that's what I say to the new people. And because that was my experience, was I had no idea what's going on, but I had a good time and I wanted to go back.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so fast forward, you know, we had to make our costumes and buy our shoes and all of this and practice. And a couple months later, I had a passport for the first time and a big heavy suitcase. And I went to Denmark for a month and I stayed with four host families and I was away from my parents. And it was a really transformative experience for me because I realized that number one, I love to travel and I'm really into cultural connection like that. You know, that was huge. So I loved that cultural exchange, but also I loved to dance and the music and everything. So that changed my life. And so then, that's how I started. And when I got back, that group fell apart because it kind of just came together for the purpose of the exchange. It's through a program called the Danish American Exchange, which was kind of founded and really held through Berea College. It isn't anymore, but still kind of based in Berea and then other like groups around the country. We do a Facebook group for anybody who wants to find out what's up. And I think there's still opportunities to take groups to Denmark and also to host Danish groups here in the States. And it's expanded beyond dance. I think it includes gymnastics now, which is of kind of a dance form of gymnastics, the Danish gymnastics. So anyways, that is how it started and really a keystone moment in my life. So I'm so grateful for all those little things that just fell into place that made that happen. I mean, I guess I'll say the other thing that happened that was perfect timing, because it's kind of like you either hook people in right at the right moment or you might lose them forever. And because I was 13, Barbara told my mom, you know, you should go to Christmas Country Dance School in Berea, Kentucky. And Barbara had been on staff there for many, many years. And so my mom told my dad, Wendy and I are going to go to Kentucky for Christmas for a week and you can come if you want, but if you don't want to, we're still going to go without you.
Go, mom.
And so yeah, my dad kind of hemmed and hawed, and he wasn't super into it because he hadn't really got into the dancing as much, you know. This was just about 6 months later. And so, but I was old enough, you have to be 13 to be in the program because it's an adult program. So it was just like the perfect age. And like, I wanted to keep dancing, but there really wasn't anything for me in my area after that tour. And so it kept me hooked in, like it just kept hooking me in, you know, these little things that just kept me going with it. So, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so how did that start to weave itself into your life as you grew into adulthood? And right now I'm speaking to you from, you're speaking to me from Durango, Colorado. Is that right?
That's right. The Wild Wild West.
Woohoo! Yeah. Do you want to kind of just like walk us through the next phases from like having these really important sparks in your life that just kept you wanting more?
Yeah, I do. Well, you won't believe, because it's like I said, this is just so important. I think people need to hear about these things that could happen or you could make happen even. So I came home from the Christmas Country Dance School. And of course, the best part of the story is we got in the car to go home and make the 9-hour drive, you know, home. And my dad turned to all of us and he said, "Who wants to go back next year?"
Oh my gosh. So he came.
He came, he learned to waltz. We stepped all over each other's feet. And yeah, so it ended up becoming my family holiday tradition, which we never had really anything that special. You know, then we suddenly had something special to look forward to. I do have a sister, an older sister, but she was already out of the house. And so she didn't really become part of this tradition. which is fine.
Sad for her. Yeah.
Yeah. She's willing to be part of it on the peripheral, but she's not like gung-ho, like some of us got into it. So, and of course I got home and I was just completely depressed. You know, I was so sad to miss all of my friends that I had made. And so of course we became pen pals, which was wonderful. And yeah, but then the craziest thing happened. There was a youth folk dance team in Berea called the Festival Dancers. And know, the Berea dance groups, there's the college team, the high school team. I think there's even like an elementary team now, and there's an alumni team. So if you dance in the college team, then there's all the alumni of that. Yeah. And they all still dance and they all travel and they tour, and it's really cool. Well, this high school team got invited to perform at the 500th Christopher Columbus celebration in Washington, D.C. that spring. So all of these people that I had, some of people that I had met, and then like lots more that I hadn't met yet, came to the D.C. area. And of course, that's where I was. And so my mom was part of, you know, helping to host all of these young people. And so then the connections grew even more. And it was so exciting for me to see their dance performances and their costumes. And they came and like performed at my elementary school that I had gone to, and all of that. And just really excited me to, because I had never seen any of that before, you know. And so, yeah, so that was cool. And then I had more pen pals after that. And then because of this Danish exchange, because it's kind of like every other year, basically, maybe a team from the U.S. will go there. And then the next year, a team from the Denmark will come here. So the Danes that I had just been in Denmark with were coming to the States. And so then to extend my time with them, I even got to go to back to Berea that summer and spend like a week with them there, and then traveled back with them to DC, which was their next stop, and then wow. Got a whole week with them there. So it was like this like immersion of immense proportions. And again, just to be excited about the Scandinavian dance, because mm-hmm. there is so different, and their costumes and their history and everything is so wonderful. So, you know, all of that just in 1 year, I had like all of these touches. And then back to Christmas school, you know, in the fall. So it was like really a lot. Just again, if all those things hadn't happened, I mean, the hook, right? The getting somebody in and keeping them involved was so important. And so, yeah, over my high school time, there were a variety of teams that I had met when I was in Denmark who came to the States. And even there was another folk dance group in Lawrence, Kansas, in Baker, Kansas. And so there was a youth team there. And so they hosted a team, which was another group that I knew. And so I went to Kansas and got to know the Kansas dancers, and kind of the same thing, then flew back to DC and had like a week with them there. So having these really important connections and keeping the cross-cultural exchange alive, more pen pals. Because this is before the internet, right, you know?
That's amazing.
Lots of letter writing, like
lots
boxes,
of stamps.
A lot of stamps. And, you know, and so much learning about how to be in someone else's house, how to be a guest in someone else's house, and how to host someone so that they're comfortable in your house. So, like a lot of other skills besides dancing, you know? And so then I will say, so that was high school. And I basically, my dance life was contra dances at Glen Echo, you know, Friday and Friday night, and maybe Sunday nights in Glen Echo, because Sunday is a school night. So, you know, but I could do the Friday nights. And then some English dancing, actually really started with English. And there were a lot of English dances in the DC area. So Sligo Elementary School, I believe, was where we used to dance, and kind of all around. And yeah, and so English and American dances, you know, just in my area. And then once a year, we would go for the week at Christmas school. But that was it. We didn't go to Pine Woods or Buffalo Gap or any of the other weeks, which in hindsight, we're all like, why didn't we not do that, you know? Because there wasn't, you know, that, like now people go to all these dance weekends. And I think that wasn't as much. I mean, I think that local areas would kind of have their local weekend, but people didn't quite get around, like, or maybe they were, and maybe it was just because I was in high school. And so that wasn't really part of it for me, you know?
Right. That you had the Christmas break, the holiday break time, who knows?
Yeah. And I would say too, and I've sort of told this before, but I am just from that generation where there really frankly wasn't too many people my age. So there were more people younger than me, maybe, who were kind of born and grown up in the folk music and dance tradition. But when I tell you that I was literally the only person in high school at the Glen Echo Contra Dances, I'm not lying. Like, it was it.
You were
it was
the
me.
One.
There might have been like one kid there, like who was like the sound person's kid or something, you know. And then maybe there were like maybe people in their 20s or 30s, but not appropriate for like me as a high school student. There were no other people my age to be like friends with. And so, but Glen Echo was a great dance space. I always think about this for other young people, like in towns where there aren't community spaces, because when you're not 21 yet, like where can you go?
Yeah.
And so I was so grateful for that, because there were also other things happening there, such an amazing dance facility. There was swing dance and there was all kinds of other partner dance happening. And that was pretty exciting for high school people. We wanted to learn how to do that. And actually my mom, she's amazing. She's such an connector and enabler and, you know, and just, I mean, when I think about all the doors that she opened for me, I'm so grateful. You know, one of the doors was, we all worked at this gym in my community and, you know, it was kind of dead on the weekends. And so my mom said, well, could we use the dance studio, like the aerobics studio, for dance classes? And they were like, yeah, that would be great. So she invited these teachers from Glen Echo to come out, you know, from DC to Virginia to teach and to kind of make it worth their time. They were teaching, you know, swing and two-step and stuff like that for adults. My mom said, well, would any of your friends like to do that? We could just do like a teen class. So, you know, 20 of my friends, and it was like 17 girls and 3 guys, I think.
Yeah.
And we all, and so we all learned how to dance the lead and the follow, like in that kind of gender roles and stuff. It was like not even existent for me in high school. So I think fast forward, you know, that's something I'm pretty passionate about today. And for me, I think it's just because I had this experience, well, my entire, not just that, but my entire experience as a folk dancer, just dancing whatever role I'm standing there doing with whoever I'm dancing it with.
Yeah.
And really more importantly, dancing with people I felt comfortable with than the role itself. So, and seeing how important that was for me as a young person to even feel comfortable dancing, to be able to have that, ability to dance either part and to dance with whoever I wanted to dance with. Yeah. So important in my comfort, as a teenager, as a sensitive teenager, you know, learning to be part of this folk world. So, so we learned to swing dance and then, you know, we would go to the dances. And so we had a place to go that didn't involve alcohol, you know, drugs and all that other stuff. I mean, it was just like good, clean fun, which is pretty cool because there isn't that much available, I think, to kids these days.
Yeah.
So that was kind of high school and how involved I was, you know. It was mostly centered around my local dance and all of that. And then how did I become a caller? Well, Christmas Country Dance School, the premise of it is it's a school. You are taking classes to learn new things. The whole premise of it was to teach teachers to take dance back to their communities and to develop. So that was really the focus of it. It was not just a fun dance week. It was to teach teachers. So that's always been the focus of Christmas school. And you always get like handouts in the classes and, you know, and we used to have like 7 classes a day. It's like 5 now, but it was really intense. Like it was like, you know, really you would be exhausted. But it was great. It was so great. And so, well, there was a class, a calling class, and our friend Bill Alkier was teaching it. And he's one of the CDSS Lifetime Achievement Award winners, I'm happy to say. And he is from Ohio. And he and his brother, Dave, were always often on staff or part of the Christmas school and taught me so much. Dave taught me line dancing, country line dancing, and how to do cha-cha and stuff like that. Yeah. And Bill, he was a caller and a clogger and really a community builder. And he was teaching the calling class. And my mom said, we were, you know, filling out our form to sign up for it in July or whatever. And, you know, the school, and my mom said, you want to do the calling class with me? I'm like, yeah, what the heck? Let's just try that. I mean, literally with zero plans to ever really use it. I mean, that's so funny, like, when you go in with that intention.
Try something.
Yeah. And I was like, and she's like, it's with Bill, you know, it's going to be a good class. I'm like, okay, yeah, that sounds fun. So we took Bill's class and I mean, you know, got the handout and all of that. And we were practicing stuff in class. And there's always house parties at Christmas dance school. And so in the evenings after everything, there's always more. And so it was the famous party, the eve before New Year's Eve, or the eve before New Year's Eve or whatever, was at Al and Alice White's house. And it was late. And so a lot of people had gone home, but all the young people were still there. And we still had Jim Morrison to play fiddle for us, because he's going to be the last one to leave. So we still had a fiddler. And we had dancers, but we did not have any callers. And so, like, somebody knew that I was in the calling class and kind of outed me. And and someone else said, I don't know any dances, you know? And they were like, we can write one. And so we wrote a dance by committee. Everybody just shouted out, like, different moves. And somebody was like, we need to write this down. And we're like, we need a pen and a paper. And so we went into the kitchen, and next to the Chex Mix and the mulled cider were some paper plates. So we grabbed a paper plate, and this is began the paper plate contras.
Oh my gosh.
We found a pen, and on the back of the paper plate, we wrote this dance down. And, you know, and it was not a good dance. I mean, the hay went over the, you know, from the A, B, this A2 into the B1. And, but none of us knew that that really wasn't allowed. And this bad, poor form, but it doesn't matter. You know, it was just a fun thing to do together. And then they said, Wendy can call it. And so I think I stood up on the stairs, you know, over the dancers, and Jim played, and we did this crazy dance, and no one cared that it was a mess and that there was no room and that it was crowded and it was a badly written dance and that they couldn't even hear me. It was just this young energy wanted to keep going, and by God, we figured out a way to do it. And so then the next day, like, horror of horrors, when I think back to it, not actually for me at the time, Bill said, does anybody want to call? And I'm like, yeah, we wrote a dance last night and I called it and I want to call it for our class. And so I got up and I called it. And of course, I mean, yeah. And I don't even remember, but because the Christmas Country Dance School is like so supportive because it's a teaching program, like, they're just like, you know, it doesn't even matter if it's terrible, you know? And so you get pumped up, and even it could have been gone really badly in other communities, but in that setting, it was perfect. And you won't believe this, but the only year, and I've been going to Christmas Country Dance School since 1991, the only year that Gene Hubert was there that I remember, that since I've been going, was that year. And he happened to be sitting there watching me do that.
Did you know who he was at that time?
I mean, not like to the extent that now I think, no. Anyways, he talked to me about it afterwards.
Wow. And yeah, Gene Hubert at this time, you know, just prolific.
Yeah.
You know, the Gene Hubert dances are just still some of the gems that we have. So
I would say, like, one of the most, you know, prolific, well-known, well-respected dance writers of our modern era.
Yeah.
Hands down.
And so he's like, Wendy, you wrote a dance.
Yeah. And also, unfortunately, passed at a young age. And so the fact that I got to have that interaction, I do feel he is like a dance angel in my life. I just see that moment is like just like little angel wings coming down and holding me, because he said, good job. You know, you wrote a dance and you called it, you know. And then he said, study the classics. And he said, and so he said, you need to know the classics, and then you also need to keep writing the new stuff, like, keep doing both. Isn't that great?
What great supportive advice to someone.
I know, So that was really like a little special moment. And so in time-wise, that was my, I was in my sophomore year of college. And what had happened, I'm just remembering now, is that when I was a freshman in college, I would go to the aerobics classes because I was into that kind of thing. And the girl who taught the aerobics classes was a senior and she needed to pass the baton. And so she said, if you can become a certified instructor, you can take over my classes. So during the summer between my freshman and sophomore year, I became an aerobics instructor. Well, why is this important? Because being an aerobics instructor is the skills you need to be a caller.
Totally.
I mean, I guess I need to ask my mom again if she had any idea that those things were related and if that was why she suggested the class. Like maybe she had like some ulterior motive. But so again, when I think about the timing of things, it's like, what? I had, and that isn't to be able to prompt before something happens ahead of the music rhythmically. I mean, so I had just spent my whole summer doing that.
Yeah. So and you're then, a natural.
And then, I don't want to toot my own horn. No, but I had already sort of busted through one of the really big barriers to becoming a caller because it's like patting your head and rubbing your belly. You know, so that was so amazing when I think about that. But it's not like I became a caller all of a sudden.
Yeah.
No. The only time I called was at Christmas Country Dance School. And then I would stop. I mean, that's just how it was, you know?
Yeah, that's where you started. That was the setting. So
and it was great.
Yeah.
They were so everybody was always so supportive. They have these late night dances at Christmas Country Dance School. They always have a calling program during the day. So you can take the class during the day. And then at night, there's an open mic. So you have an opportunity to actually practice and you could practice every night of the week. And then of course, those late night parties, usually again, like, you know, people want a caller. So, so I had a lot of opportunity for 1 week and I would take the classes and I would call and then I would just forget about it for a year until I graduated from college and I moved to New York City for my first job out of college. And of course they had a dance scene there. And well, this is an important detail. I went and there was a creepy guy there and I never went back.
Mm,
yeah. Yep. For like the first year.
Okay. Yeah.
And then we went to Christmas Country Dance School after September 11th, which was another kind of life-changing moment for me because I genuinely thought I was going to die that day. And I thought I was going to die without telling my parents that I loved them.
Oh,
and it
my
was,
gosh. Were you in Manhattan?
Yes. I was in the fourth tallest building at the time. So the second tallest building after the two fell, and our fire alarm went off when the buildings collapsed because the ash cloud came into our building and set off the fire alarms.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I was 22 years old and I was in a dark stairwell and the fire alarm was going off and we couldn't go out onto the street because it was like a big cloud, a swirling cloud of dust. And we couldn't go back up. You know, we were just stuck in this dark. It was very scary and there's no phones. And yeah, it was terrifying. I mean, genuine PTSD, like genuinely
for
thought.
Sure.
Yeah. Did not know what was going to happen. I thought it was the beginning of World War III. I mean, was planning to be sheltered in place for days, you know. And luckily, we were able to walk home a few hours later and everything. But it was a hard time. It was basically like, I have no purpose in my life. And none of this is meaningful. And what the heck am I doing every day going to this office that smells like the burning epicenter?
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
months. Mm. It was awful. Like, I am kind of traumatized by like like campfires even can bring it back for me. It's bad. It was bad for months. I think that's something a lot of people who you know, weren't there and didn't experience don't realize. Like, it wasn't just a one-day event. It was like months of like being exposed to that same and bringing it back up and over again. And so there's a happy ending to this story. Okay. So it was bad. I'm a pretty positive person, but for me, I was like a little depressed. You know what I mean? Yeah. I would say, I don't know how many boxes of Cheez-Its I ate, but I ate a lot. And I, you know, I put on weight and it was just not a good time. And so
we ate a lot
of comfort food. You know what I mean? And I was just sort of, I was like out on the lone, I was all alone, you know, and I lived alone and there was like helicopters flying around and you just never knew. And there was always these threats, more threats. And I just never knew what was going to happen next. So it was a really tentative time. And my girlfriend had moved to the city. My girlfriend from college, we had studied abroad together and she was from Connecticut, moved to Brooklyn also, and was working on the hotline for the emotional help hotline.
Oh, wow.
And so she was having like also a pretty traumatic experience having to talk with people every day. You know, she of course had like really important work, but it's the kind of work that you kind of burn out on because it's so intense. And so it was just a couple weeks before Christmas. And I said, you should come to Christmas school with me. You should come to Berea and let's just dance. And she was a dancer, but she'd never done this kind of stuff. And so that was her first time. And we got her, I was like, you know, I phoned Joe Tarter again, poor Joe Tarter. Hey, I know it's past the registration date, but I got a friend, we got to get in. Like, it's like urgent, you know? And so he found a space and she came and, you know, we were both able to really turn over a new leaf after that, which was so great. I think that's what's so powerful about dance. Such a healing thing, the music, the people, the dance, the connection, you know, after such a three, four months of just, awful. So it was like, turn over a new leaf, new year. The happy news is a couple of things. One is Julie Fishman, who is my friend who came with me, she quit the hotline. She was like, I'm done with that. I can't do that.
Wow.
And she applied and went on crew to Pinewoods that summer.
Oh my gosh.
Talk about jumping in deep. Like,
so one total dance, turning point.
Like, if somebody out there needs to know why dance, music, and song is important, why it deserves funding, is because we can change lives. Like, literally take someone out of depression, out of PTSD, turn a new leaf, try something new, change their life. I mean, this was a changing moment for her, you know? And then she said, oh, that was so fun. Let's go dancing in New York. And I was like, because I'd had a bad experience. By the way, I don't want to put, this is not a slight on New York at all, because this happens in lots of dance communities and it's something I'm really passionate about. So, because again, like young people are kind of sensitive and I kind of had that experience a lot as a young person. And so I just share it because they did take care. They did ask that person never to come back because like this person was like very, very offensive to lots of, it turned out I wasn't alone. Okay. I found out. And so they did take care of that. And he wasn't there when we came back. Thank goodness, you know? And so I just say that because to other organizers and colors and whatever, you know, we've got to make sure that it's a safe dance space, or we're going to lose these valuable people, lose these important people. So we went to the dance. And so that's when I kind of got back into the dance community, like a local dance community. And then again, just like another door opened, which was, an organizer there, Merle, she said, you know, we're always bringing in callers from everywhere else. We don't have very many local New York callers. And so Bob Isaacs is going to do a calling program. And would you like to be part of it? And I don't know how she knew that I don't really know, but again, it was just another door. And so I said, yes. And so I did a 6-month caller training program with Bob Isaacs and with the intent that we would meet once a month on a Friday night for a couple of hours, we'd all call, he'd do a lesson. And then with the intent that after the 6 months, we would all put on a dance And then we would start rotating into the schedule as guest callers, and then eventually like have our own, you know, half or full evening. So that's when it kind of went from just calling for fun and a dance week once a year to actually, you know, really using it like a regular evening dance.
Neighbor Alabama, go one son and dominate across. Back out when the butterfly whirl. Ladies shake and cross school by. Ladies got a right. Blue cheeks and a heady meet your partner, balance and swing. Circle up.
Yeah, and in a place where you lived and yes. were feeling part of a community
yes.
in your day-to-day life instead of, you know, the, yes. the once a year
yes.
infusion, which is also really amazing, but it's like, yeah, taking it out into the world.
Yeah. And so that was just such an important community. I mean, it's kind of like your, you know, your pledge class or whatever. We're all like still so bonded. I can think nice. Of everybody that was in my group I'm still in touch with. And, you know, some people are still calling or writing. And, you know, that was just like a springboard, really.
So, so cool. And then, so how did you get out west?
Yeah, well, so then it was like, you know, the record player. So I have this great plan. I'm part of the program. I'm starting to call. I remember Nils Fredlund came, and I got to be the guest caller with Nils. And he's someone that has become an important mentor for me. And so anyway, so I got to do my guest call with Nils. And right around this time, it was a big year for me, actually. I had some more kind of hard stuff happen. Including my dad had been my senior year of college. My dad had been diagnosed with terminal cancer. So mm-hmm. he was already stage four when they found it, but he mm-hmm. lived for 5 years with it. I mean, crazy. So, and so he was at the end of those 5 years. And so okay. this is the fall of 2004. And my sister was still in the DC area. I was in New York. My parents had moved because he was, you know, he knew his time was limited. They had moved out 2 years earlier to Durango, Colorado, and to retire there just to have fun and ski and sun and all of that good stuff. And just to really kind of live it up while they could and while he was feeling good. And so my sister decided to move to Durango. And then right around that time, you know, she was looking, she found a place to live, and she called me and said, I found this place, but it's huge. Why don't you come and be my roommate? And I had had some other pretty hard stuff happen that year. I'd actually been violently mugged. Some people may or may not know that about me. So I had a pretty hard year, and I love New York, and then could never imagine leaving it, honestly. But at that moment, to be with my family and to kind of take a little time to heal seemed like the right thing to do. And so I decided to leave after New York spent all that time investing in me
yeah.
to become a local caller. I up and left them. The good news is the investment paid off because I moved to Durango. And you know that salsa commercial for Pace Salsa? New York City. Well, that's what happened when I moved to Durango. They were like, we have a caller from New York City. And I never even called half an evening before, you know, never.
But you
much
were from
as
New York City.
City.
So.
Yeah, much as a whole evening. And so it's kind of like that, you know, game telephone when like the message just keeps changing and no one really knows. So it's just, we have a caller from New York City. Let's get her going. Let's get her on board. And so, you know, they had the community here had kind of been like up and down and up and down and up and down, as communities do with volunteers and people moving and coming and going. And so they really needed kind of a shot in the arm of fresh energy for calling and dancing and, you know, dancers and musicians and stuff like that. And so I jumped in the deep end and kind of started out just being their caller. And then just very, very shortly after that, started hiring bands from the Four Corners area and starting to really just take over programming. And so kind of the whole kit and caboodle, hosting bands, calling dances. And so it was a very quick ramp up for me. And luckily everyone was very nice to me, because surely I made a lot of mistakes.
But you had the energy and the time, you know, to put in that effort. So I'm sure it was appreciated.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so tell us more about the Durango community, because you stayed around.
Yeah, I did. I've been here 18 years. Oh my gosh. For the record, I did go back and call for New York quite a bit. So they still hopefully got their investment paid off. They were very gracious to have me back, and it was great to still be, you know, involved in that community. So, but yeah, Durango, gosh, the very first dance is kind of a hilarious story. Like, I had just come back from Christmas Country Dance School. My dad had just passed, and I was living in boxes. I had just moved. It was a lot all at once. And they called me on Saturday of the dance at noon. I was planning to go as a dancer. And they said, our caller is supposed to come from Albuquerque, but there's a huge blizzard and he's not going to come because he doesn't have a car that'll make it. Can you call the dance tonight? And I was like, okay. And then I realized I'd left my dance cards in Kentucky at the New Year's Eve party at Harvey's house. Yes. So I'm scrambling to find photocopies of dance cards, like on the floor of my closet, because I have I'm literally living in boxes at this moment. And I cobbled enough dances together to call that night, you know. Anyways, and so our community was pretty vibrant. It was a monthly dance, so not really just the amount of effort to put into a weekly dance really wasn't possible, because we didn't really have local musicians, not too many that could actually, you know, do it regularly like that. So we did have to bring in, and because we live in the middle of our little corner of paradise, it's not on the way to too many places. But in New Mexico, they have a really vibrant music scene there, and lots of bands, and so many bands that can't get enough play time at the New Mexico dances, that they all were stoked to come up to Durango. So it was about a four-hour drive from Santa Fe or Albuquerque. And so not too bad. And for bands, they can road trip. A lot of them are birders. They have their binoculars along the way. They, you know, they make it a weekend. We made it where it was a weekend. They came, we, you know, had fed them dinner or fed them breakfast the next day. They stayed with us. It was a lot of fun for us too, actually, for my mom and I to get to know all of these musicians and stuff. And so I could book bands out for a year, you know, and then between me and there weren't really any other Durango callers that I can recall. There were some other callers that could maybe come in from other places. And so we had a pretty vibrant scene there. And so I did that for 8 years. I ran the dance. And, you know, every community has its struggles. Speaking as an organizer, you either have a beautiful dance hall and no band, or a great band and no dance hall, or no colors, or, you know, you have lots of dancers and the space is too small. I mean, there's always just one thing that doesn't quite work, you know? And so for us, we're always struggling with the hall, try to find a hall or a sound guy, you know, and paying for sound and, you know, not having sound equipment and stuff like that. And so working through all of those things was always kind of a challenge, but gosh, and we had a pretty good group, anywhere from, you know, sometimes 40, 60 dancers to over 100, you know, at a dance, which for a town of 18,000 and a county of 50,000 isn't bad. It's not a big town, you know? So it was pretty fun. It was really fun. And it's a different scene now. It's, I'm going to say it's somewhat non-existent since the pandemic.
Well, yeah, which is not uncommon. We're all in a new place and having to see where we are and see what can happen.
Yeah. So I'm trying to get that going again. And as an organizer, and I know this is about collars, but still I wear that hat a lot, is, you know, trying to navigate the mask thing and trying to do right by my community, which is older, and wanting to really be sensitive to age and health, keeping everybody safe and healthy, happy. So that's kind of where I'm at right now, is I have interest from local musicians that want to play. And I think that there's interest in dancers to dance, but everybody has like a different vision of what it is. And personally, because of my roots with Barbara, going to a house where there's 8 people and a fiddler, I am fine with that. And if that's what it needs to be, a small community, and we have kind of established boundaries that we feel good about, but we're dancing and we are in community, then that's what it needs to be. And I don't mind it when it's around the house and mind the dresser, you know, when we call it intimate square, I call it intimate squares, an evening of intimate squares, because that's usually what fits inside of someone's living room, you know?
Yeah.
Or a contra line with 8 people or whatever, or you know what? There are a lot of great triplets out there, and you just need 6 dancers and you can do triplets all night long and feel like you've really had a good evening. And so I'm really just open to all of that in that format.
Yeah. I mean, thinking where you started with just a small gathering and then where you've gone. Oh, I love it. So you call contra square and English. Is that right?
Yeah.
And
And I like to lead couples dance too. Like especially like Lindy Hop and salsa, Latin dances. I want it all, Mary. Like, you know what they say, Mary, I'm a Jill of all trades and a master of none. I just love it all. Variety is the spice of life for me, for sure. Mm-hmm. So I love learning something new, you know?
Yeah.
It makes me a better dancer. The more dance forms that I try, I get to draw in all the little things that I learned from each one to be a better dancer overall.
Mm, I love it. And so in all of those different roles where you're leading a little couple dance over here or some squares over there, you know, what is your approach? Like as a dance leader, how do you think about trying to get people moving on the dance floor, and what are you hoping to create for them in that experience?
Yeah. It's so simple. And if I just always remember this one thing, then everything else flows from there. And that is that my only job is to help people have fun. Fun, F-U-N, 3-letter word. That's it. Okay. So then, and this goes into the very controversial discussion, possibly controversial discussion for some people around gender roles and stuff like that. Okay. Because at the end of the night, it's a success when people have had fun. Not did it right, did it perfect, had the best partner, you know, whatever, make no mistakes. No. No one is going home with an Olympic medal, you know? So, and fun means something different to everyone. It's personal to you, okay? Because we all are genetically different. We've had different upbringings. We've had different life experiences, different educations, different work experiences, different things happen in our lives. And we all have different talents that we bring in. And as a result, the way we perceive things and view things is different, right? So And that's what I mean by saying that this is where I come from for everything that I do now, because I don't know what your idea of fun is. I know it's different maybe than mine, or like if we were to rank like the different aspects of a dance, like the music, the people, my partner, the dance moves, the collar, the space, you know, the ambiance, the snacks, I don't know, the break, you know, the potluck beforehand, the diner afterwards, whatever. In everybody would rank those things in a different order. So I just need to provide, like, the way I think about it is sort of like eliminate the barriers to fun. Yeah. And so barriers to fun include men, women, roles. Okay. Because if I don't identify with that, or I want to dance a different role, or I want to swap roles, then that's a barrier to my fun. Mm-hmm. So that's why I've been, you know, left those gendered roles behind about, I don't know, about 6 years ago, because I realized it was a barrier to fun. In particular, I was with some at a intergenerational dance week called Cumberland Dance Week in Tennessee. And there were some like smaller kids dancing. And I realized like, well, they're not gents and they're not ladies. It's two little boys. I'm going to say they were two little boys. I don't know what they thought of themselves. Okay.
Yep.
Dancing. They were two kids dancing with their buddy and two other kids dancing with their friend. And so gents and ladies was completely a barrier to them. Okay. I even experimented with, okay, the cats and the dogs, meow, you know, because I thought that was kind of playful, but you know what? Even that was a barrier, because they didn't need those roles to have a good time. They were dancing with their buddy. They were dancing, period. They were having a good time. So that was an example of, okay, I need to like really strip back all of these things that I've been taught as a caller, which is really hard, because I can tell you how many times I've practiced these square dance patterns and have them like in, like memorized in my, the core of me to have to use something else. But I realized that I'm not doing my job unless I do that. So what are the impediments to fun? And I want to take those away so that we can get moving, get dancing. Like, that's what it's all about. You know, when I go back to that very first dance I went to at Barbara's house with the other teenagers, was completely disoriented. You know what it was? Someone said, look up and put out a hand. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, because somebody's going to grab you and hopefully not grab you. Okay. I know, not like they're going to gently connect with you. They're going to hold your hand. No, they're going to connect with you. You know, the person who knows what's going on is going to help you. So it's just that, like, look up and smile and be ready, you know? And so if we can peel back all this other stuff that we've sort of been part of our tradition, and it's not like it's not a judgment. It's just an evolution of where we are now. It's like at the end of the day, let's just have some fun. So let's keep it simple. Let's keep it where everyone can participate as to on the level that they want to, in the way that they want to.
I love it. I love it. And one of the things that I am interested in and that I've loved to talk with different callers about is, because I just think, I say this in so many episodes, I'm like, it's such a weird job. It's such a particular job, the role of the caller. And, you know, you're talking about this big, I would say it's a debate in the dance community around dance roles. You know, people are talking about it and communities are exploring different ways to navigate that question and that challenge, which I think is really great that like people are involved and talking it through and trying to figure it out together. But then when it comes down to it, it's the caller that has to say those words. like it's that it comes down to the one person who's at the microphone. And so how, you know, when it comes to representing, you know, those sort of community decisions, do you feel like a responsibility as the person at the mic to kind of take stock and sort of carry out the like the wishes of the people? You know, you have your very clear stance on it, which really informs how you do your job, which is so, you know, so important. But then what is like for you the interplay of also kind of trying to understand this big community conversation and then sort of be willing to uphold your perspectives you're seeing out in the world, like at the microphone?
I'm about to say something kind of controversial.
All right.
So is everyone seated? you know what? I haven't always been that strong in like taking, I'm the kind of person, like I'm not an A, like alpha, but I love the calling role because I've been asked to be the leader. Okay. So then it feels good. Cause it's not like I'm like this pushy person who like took the leadership role. No, they invited me in. And so I get to kind of do it my way, you know? Yeah, so that's one piece is that previously, maybe I didn't have such a strong conviction. And so then whatever, you know, but I've seen other callers have modeled things for me. Like they asked if I tried to book them for our dance week and they would say, do you gender balance? Well, no one had ever asked me that question before. And I frankly didn't even know. I didn't know if our weekend gender balanced or not. And I was happy to report that this particular event did not. And so we were able to hire that person. That person does not do events that are gender balanced. Mm-hmm. And maybe there still are events that are, I don't know. You know, I'm not involved in that, but
yeah,
just that awareness, seeing someone else sort of have a conviction and stand up for it. I can, looking back, like now that you asked me this question, that's what came up to me was kind of gave me the courage to do what I do now. So where I'm at right now is I even, when possible, don't like to use the terms larks and robins because that is also an impediment to fun because it's tricky for people to know, well, I can't wait, I'm a lark. I'm a Robin. What does that even mean? And what it really relates to is that it's really hard for people to remember their left hand from their right hand. Lefts and rights are tricky too. It's also an impediment. So the truth is that we just don't have a perfect system yet. And certain dance forms, I will say English country dance, for example, lend themselves to gender role free in some ways easier, perhaps easier than American dance form. But not always. It's not a rule. It's just my experience was I did, you know, a whole week of gender role free English calling at Pinewoods at Campers Week. And it actually was the best English calling I've ever done because it simplified like all the teaching notes and all the words. It was like, why aren't we calling English like this all the time, you know what I mean? And so that was a big, like, powerful moment for me to see that, wow, gender role-free calling actually made it easier for me as a caller and it made it easier for them as dancers, which increased the fun. Yes, win. Now we're doing it.
And was that, would you consider what you were doing positional calling? Is that,
yes. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I meant to say, so I'm more in the global positional calling bucket whenever possible. Mm-hmm. And in terms of roles, I talk about partners and neighbors and corners, like, you know, in English, especially because those are common terms that everybody knows and nobody has to like relearn those unless you're a new dancer, then everything is new for you. Right. Okay. But partner, but even before you've come to the dance world, you know, your partner And you know your neighbor, because if you live in a house and you have a neighbor, then you know who a neighbor is. They're the person next to you or across from you, right? Across the street from you. And so these are not terms that are like, but Lark and Robin, that is not necessarily something like with innate knowledge. You know what I mean? That's like saying, do a Mad Robin to a brand new group of dancers. Like it's not actually informing anything. Right. So, yeah. So I'm definitely been very influenced by the global positional callers out there who are teaching and teaching that method. And wow, it was so eye-opening for me to move in that direction. And also with my American calling, but just certain things take longer to adjust, you know. Squares are a little trickier because, like, again, I've had this pattern, or, you know, how do I identify people, you know, in contrast, same way, outside of partner, neighbor, you know, opposite corner and those kinds of things. So, and then trying not to use rights and lefts, because actually rights and lefts, it's also just a barrier to fun. We can't avoid it. Sometimes we have to use it, you know? So there's a little bit of like teaching, a little bit of ramp up, you know, change always is hard. That is something I teach in my professional life, is change management, like at corporations. And what we say is that even change that you choose for yourself is hard. So even if it's a choice, you made it, you wanted to make this change, you're excited about it, it's still hard. So I think the thing we have to remember in our community in this discussion is that everyone is going through change, and that's hard for everyone. And it's not like, so the people who for years use ladies and gents, and that's what they know, they're having to learn something new. And then the people who for years were forced into those roles against their comfort, like me, a 13-year-old who just wanted to dance with my mom, and I had to be a gent. And right. I was told comments like, you're the cutest gent in this line, or look at those muscles, or where's your mustache? Okay. So somebody, a 13-year-old who just wants to dance with their mom, you know, and is put into these roles, they have to learn something new too. They actually get to learn how to be free and just dance the role that they want to dance. I mean, everyone is going through change. So if we can just remember that and be kind to each other, then we are going to make it through. We're just in that, like, we're in that, that discomfort zone, but we're pushing through to comfort. But that's because we're all on this uphill climb learning something new. And even me as a caller, so back to being a caller, I am not perfect, and I am human, and I have learned to do something, and I've been doing it now for many years, too many years, to where old habits die hard. And so even though my intentions are good, I still say the wrong things sometimes. Sometimes I don't say it that clearly. Sometimes I say rights and lefts, and it's confusing to people. My friend Greg Potter, he uses a Sharpie, and he puts a big L on his left hand because he has a hard time with that, you know? So I guess the point is for dancers to also be kind to us as callers and organizers and musicians, because we are all in this together. We're all navigating something new, and we're trying, literally, I believe we genuinely have the same goal in mind, which is to have fun. Our goal is at the end of the day to have a good time. And we're all just navigating how to get there the best and easiest way, like by removing those obstacles to fun, those impediments to fun. And so I guess the other obstacle that is really a real thing, and I personally experienced it when I did a dance weekend in Kansas in December, is that we could all be called Rusty right now. That could be our name. We could all be called Rusty. Yep. It doesn't matter that I called a virtual dance every month for 2 years during this shutdown. Those dances are not the dances that I'm calling at with real live humans.
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, just getting feedback from that Kansas group about how it went and thinking about my own performance, because I'm very introspective and, you know, I'm probably my hardest critic, right? And thinking about how it went. And it was like, yeah, I'm just rusty and I'm just navigating the global positioning and the gender role free. I was like on fire 6 months before the shutdown. And then it shut down. So I haven't been able to fine tune it and develop it since then. I mean, and I just started calling about to live dancers about a year ago, last March in Moab, Utah was the first dance that I called, you know, in a couple of years. So, and it, you know, and then it's been a couple of camps this summer and a couple of weekends. I mean, it's just coming back online, like slowly, you know, actually now it's like going crazy. The stuff is coming back online. But our ability to kind of match the speed that it's coming back, right? We're all just, oh, our muscle memory, our body memory, our physicalness, our actual physical ability, our vocal cords. I mean, it's rusty. Those of us as callers, we've, you know, unlike musicians who've probably played more and possibly fine-tuned their craft more, we're really like we just didn't have like the amount and the kind of experiences to keep our chops sharp.
Totally. We can only do our job in public. It's very hard to practice.
Yeah. I just sort of want our, so not only are we rusty just with like our basic skills, but we're also all navigating gender role free calling, whatever that looks like. For the most part, you know, that is happening in large, I see that for me as a trend. And so you asked me earlier and I never answered it and I'm going to answer it right now. So I am a gender role free caller. I prefer not to use Larks and Robins whenever possible. I try to use global positioning. So the people who have their back to the door that you came in, the people who are near the clock wall, the fireplace, the mirror, the windows, whatever, that's what we mean by global orientation. So whenever possible, that's the kind of way that I'm talking about it. Partner, neighbor, maybe a corner or opposite or something. Here is how I feel about it. So for example, and this is what might be a little controversial. And actually, you know what? I love everyone's feedback. If they're kind, I would love to engage in this conversation. But here's one perspective. Okay, Mary Wesley. If I don't use, like, let's say your dance is a Larks and Robins dance, and I don't use Larks and Robins, and I don't use Gents and Ladies, am I still complying with the policy of your dance? Mm-hmm. Because I haven't said the words that you don't want me to use, but I haven't used the words that you want, that your dancers are used to using. But I have called an evening and people have had fun and actually possibly removed some barriers to the fun by not using those terms that your community has decided on. That's a little controversial. And I don't have a hard stance on this, okay? So during the virtual dances, I use Larks and Robins because there was no, everyone was in there. There was no global position. Okay.
Yeah.
other than the camera or away from the camera. But even then, some people are mirroring and some people aren't. And, you know, some things is backwards and not. And what's up the hall and down the hall in virtual land. Yes. Oh my God. But that's my preference, is to, whenever possible, call without any role names, like other than, like I said, partner or neighbor or something. I prefer not to use gendered or even these substitute role names. Okay, that's my preference. And I have an opportunity to actually just talk to the organizers about it, either when they book me or even after the fact, because see, a lot of these events are being rescheduled 3 years later. And so all that stuff kind of was like not even a conversation. So I have an opportunity to just say, hey, are you willing to let me do it the way I'm doing it? Because I think this is the most fun for everybody. It's the most inclusive for everybody. And it removes the barriers and it allows everybody to participate the way they want to. And so I think it makes more people happy and more fun on the dance floor. And I can say that to them. I have an opportunity, just like that caller who asked me, do you gender balance? I have an opportunity to influence this discussion in a positive way. And Mary, this is an incredible weight. This is an incredible pressure, because I'm human. I'm not perfect. I'm rusty. It's been a few years and I'm still learning how to do this best. So I want to give everybody like a really good time to go, oh my gosh, Wendy never even used any of those terms. Oh, we had an awesome time. And then like spread the gospel around the world. You know, I want that. But the truth is, it's going to be kind of rough for me up on the stage right now, because I'm still navigating that.
Yeah.
I still just don't have like the words like perfect to come out so that it's like clean and crisp and clear. Like sometimes it's a little muddy for me even, right? So it's an incredible weight, but we have to try. We can't just like not do it because it's not going to be perfect. So I think just saying that to the organizers, like, this is what I'm using. Hey, I'm a little rusty right now. I'm still navigating. I would even just say that I'm just still perfecting kind of how this works best for me and for dancers. But a real life story that happened to me in 2019, before the pandemic, was one of the last weekends that I did, was Dance in the Desert. And I called the first evening, and that night, two people came up to me. And they said, I saw what you did. Thank you. I didn't use Larks and Robins. I didn't use Gents and Ladies. I just used, you know, the fireplace, the door, whatever. And they're members of, you know, kind of the LGBTQ+ community. And they said, thank you. We saw what you did. And my friend, who is cisgendered, heterosexual male, is like, what? What did you do?
What'd you do, Wendy?
And that was when I knew I had done it. I had done my job, because there was no friction. So what we're trying to do is eliminate the friction, the bad feelings on the dance floor. My friend, cisgendered, heterosexual male, probably likes to dance the, you know, traditional gent role, the lark role, had no clue that the whole evening I had never used those terms. And he was blown away.
And he just got to dance.
And
everyone just got to dance.
So in that moment, everyone had fun, because we eliminated the friction on the dance floor. The problem is, I'm not perfect and I'm still learning this, and there's still friction because I'm not always the best at explaining and, you know, saying, okay, you're the person on the right. You have a right hand free. You're going to pull across. It's a chain. It's not a lady's chain. It's not a right hand chain. It's just a chain, you know? And so sometimes there's a little friction because everybody's learning something new, right? Because it's just, as we start to get into more complicated dances, it's a little harder. right? And that's where I'm at, of doing a weekend versus a whole week. I'm using a lot more of my repertoire, and I have to learn how to call those dances in different ways. So I just ask the community to be kind and know that we're all coming back from something, and especially callers, we haven't flexed our calling muscle for a while. So please be kind to us. We all have the intention of just having a good time. That's what this community is all about.
Yeah. Yeah. So, oh my gosh, you've just given us so many beautiful stories and sentiments, and I love hearing a little bit from the Durango community. I usually close with three questions that are just, short and sweet, but it's fun to get kind of a survey of different callers. So the first one is that something I notice a lot that callers do is part of our job is to notate and kind of collect and curate dances, right? Because that's like our materials that we work with. So how do you notate and organize your dance repertoire?
Yes. First of all, the first dance I collected from another caller was Gay Pfeiffer, and it was called Mars and Venus. Anyways, that was my first, index card, I'll say. That was my first and recipe card that I collected. And I was calling in England, and I was carrying a backpack full of really heavy books back and forth for a week. And like, I had like a permanent strain for several weeks after that. And I promised myself, because I was going to go back to England the next summer, I'm not going to do that. I have to go electronic. So I got an iPad and I got the Dancing Master app. Mm-hmm. It just happened that I went with that one. I know there's other ones out there because I happen to be doing an English ball with David Millstone out here in Santa Fe. And I think I was like, what are you using? And he was like, I'm using this. And I was like, cool. Because I knew I could put the English dances in. And frankly, it works so well for me because I do have kind of an English and American repertoire. And so it's got all the features for my English dances that I kind of need, like key, composition and all that extra stuff that I might not need for contra or square. And it does just fine for me for those American dances. So all of my dances, I kind of like spent like I think I lived in my bed for like a month, and I just like put like things into a spreadsheet, and then imported it. And now everything just goes into my iPad. And so that is how I live now, is paper free. And it made a big difference in my ability to program and organize. So for those of you that are still on the cards, if you want to break away and you need some encouragement, this is your wake up call. Think about going electronic. That's a great way to organize. Yeah. So that's how
What is it that makes, that changed your programming? Is it searchable? You can use categories. I'm still on the cards. I'm going to out myself.
Oh, yeah. Lots of people are. It's that it really helped me learn my repertoire and remember kind of like key figures, because I can have everything sorted by figures. So I'm like, I want to dance with, a pass through to an ocean wave or whatever, and then I can search for that. If I'm looking for something special, and I can see sort of the bigger picture, and I can like move things around without the cards blowing off the stage, getting wet, having paper clips on the thing. So I like all of that. It also tracks when I call it. So for example, if you can't remember, like, did I call that at the last dance, and you're looking kind of for variety, or when was the last time, or what was, and so it's nice because you have this like history. And then of course there's other added features. Like if you are coordinating with a band, like especially with English, you're going to send your program a couple weeks ahead of time. And then it makes it really easy just to email the program to the band. So there's like extra features there that you may not need as like an American caller necessarily. So there's actually probably so many features that I'm not even really using. You know, and another thing that's really good to have if you are an English caller is the Barnes, the electronic Barnes. So I can't carry those around as a caller. You know, I've just got other stuff I'm carrying around, but it's nice to have that music electronic. And also I have the Portland collection electronically. So as a caller, you may not think it's your responsibility to have music, but I'm saying that it's really, really helpful. So I have the three Barnes and the like three Portland collections, and I have my dance cards all on my iPad, and no more neck, you know, because I get to carry enough other stuff around in my backpack, water bottles and shoes and heavy stuff, you know? So I think maybe big picture, it's really nice to see when I plan for a week, you know, that I can really look at the whole thing. But with the cards, it's a little trickier to like see the big picture.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Do you have any pre or post dance rituals, like when you're getting ready to call or after you get off stage?
Pre-dance or during the dance. And you can, if you want to watch me do this, you can watch the Five Things YouTube.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Cause I did this on the Five Things. If I teach an early morning class, so this is like calling like at a dance weekend or week, I tell people to come early and we're going to do stretches, but the stretches are mind exercises. I mean, it's for our body too, but we're doing what I call cross meridian. So anything that crosses the meridian with our hands, our feet, our legs, you know, and that just zaps us into the present moment. So when people are a little sleepy in the morning, that's a great pre-dance ritual. But also at 10 o'clock at night, the clock strikes and people turn into dance zombies. And that is a good time as a caller to have everybody stop what they're doing, cross their legs and bend down or whatever. Don't pull your hamstrings, you know, and just do eagle arms, do eagle legs or whatever. Okay. Do the old thing from gym class, stretch your hamstrings. Okay. Because it instantly gets people into the moment. It refreshes them. It wakes them up. So I think that's a great ritual that I would love to spread. Let's spread that.
Awesome. And how about when you wrap up, everyone has had a wonderful evening, like you step off stage, what do you need in that moment?
I need to be left alone. Because I've just been talking for 3 hours or so for true. 6 hours a day for a week or, yeah. So just remember that, you know, I need down and quiet time too. Even though I'm an extrovert, I really need those opportunities to rest and recharge. But you know what? Hearing from people at the end of the evening, like nice things is great, but maybe like wait for like your criticisms for like, you know, the next day or something.
Absolutely. Awesome. And you just kind of answered my third question, which is whether you are an extrovert or an introvert.
You know what?
If you know, and it sounds like
I do. I do. I mean, this is my work. I do talent development, and we use tools, scientifically validated tools, to find out are people more, you know, get their energy more from social settings or from internal, and we measure that. And the interesting thing about it is that what we know about these tools is, like a lot of people know, like Myers-Briggs and StrengthsFinders, DISC, there's a bunch out there. I use one called TMA method, and I used to use one called Predictive Index, PI. But what we know is that when you have something really traumatic, you can change. And for me personally, I lost my husband suddenly, and I did change a little bit. And on top of that, and this is for everyone, so that was for me personally, but I would argue that this pandemic is been a change for everyone. And that I would argue that everybody I work with now, like who uses this tool that I coach, that they are experiencing, it has been a dramatic change, and that it has affected how we are. So the fact that our work, we don't go into work necessarily, you know, the fact that I work at home now, or the hybrid work experience, the fact that we all had to be isolated for so long, It made some introverts more extroverted, and maybe it made some extroverts more introverted. And I think we're all on a scale. And, you know, one time I had my tarot cards read, and the reader, she knew me well enough, and she was laughing, and she said, "I can't wait to do your reading." When she said, I think it's your life card. Your life card is the Hermit.
Yeah. And so my jaw just dropped.
Yeah. She was like, "Oh my God." But the cool thing about that was, first of all, the Hermit is such a cool card. I discovered after that, it's like a monk, and he's all about just like, he's all about like internal, learning and observation. And he carries a lantern, and that light is his example shining out for all. So even when we are internal and doing our work inside, we have a shadow that we cast. We have a light that we share. And so I thought that was so beautiful, because what it is as a caller, I always felt that as a caller, I was this torchbearer of tradition. And so I just thought that was amazing, because I always saw myself like carrying the torch. And then here was this, the Hermit is carrying his lantern and like shining out, leading by example. So as callers, we really have to lead by example. So I resonated with it, even though it was funny. And the other thing that was so important about learning about that for myself was that I also need my quiet time. And that even as an extroverted dance teacher, you know, I was always out there so much that it was actually exhausting, right? Even though it gave me energy, it was exhausting. So finding that balance. And so that's where everybody's on a scale, you know, yes. And that we have to, I hate to even put myself in a bucket, you know,
totally.
But I respect my need for like quiet and me time so much more now since I got that card as my life card. It was like it was like permission to not go out on the weekend, to just stay home, to not make plans all the time, because during the week I was always teaching classes and whatever else, or to not go out during the week if I'm going to be out calling a dance on Saturday night or vice versa. So if you're that kind of person where you just feel the social pressure, or you feel like naturally you're one way, that doesn't mean you have to be that way all the time. Doesn't mean that we can't operate in the other way. It means we just have to be aware of our energy levels and protecting ourselves and letting our loved ones around us know kind of what's happening for us.
Yeah.
So at dance camps, definitely like know that sometimes the staff needs just like quiet time. They're like space on all the time.
Absolutely. I know. I think there can be such a misconception of like, oh, they're at the microphone. They love it, you know? And yeah. It's always a balancing act.
I am not afraid to be on a mic, but it's not like I need the spotlight. Like I'm totally, it's just like that happened to be the role that I got.
Yeah. And that's the tool that you need. And like you said, this is something David Millstone told me when I was first learning. He was one of my mentors. And he said, you know, the dancers have elected you as the quickest way to get dancing, because they need someone to organize them and teach them and lead them. And so, yeah, you are, in a sense, you know, by committee. Even as you were at Berea writing your paper plate dance, you know. Well, Wendy Graham, torchbearer, caller, wonderful, wonderful to spend this time with you. Thank you so much.
What a delight. And thank you for doing this. And I can't wait to hear some of the other episodes that are going to be coming out in the future.
Yes. All right. That's a wrap.
Star, what's around? Look for a new neighbor. Balance. Circle.
Thank you so much, Wendy, for talking with me. Check out the show notes at podcasts.cdss.org to learn more. This project is supported by CDSS, the Country Dance and Song Society, and is produced by Ben Williams and me, Mary Wesley. Thanks to Great Meadow Music for the use of tunes from the album Old New England by Bob McQuillan, Jane Orzechowski, and Deanna Stiles. Visit podcasts.cdss.org for more info. Happy dancing!